Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Good afternoon from Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. This is Valley Roundup. On today's show, Snowmass stands up for a beloved restaurant, Glenwood Springs stands against a transportation tax, and some good old-fashioned bear cuddling. Joining me today are Erica Robbie, editor of the Snowmass Sun. Hi, Erica.
Hey, Allison.
Madeline Osberger, contributing editor with the Aspen Daily News. Hi, Madeline. Thanks for coming in.
Great to be here.
And we have on the phone from the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent, Thomas Phippen. Thomas, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Allison.
Stay tuned. All right, we're going to begin this show with a big welcome for Thomas. It's so nice to have you first debuting on Valley Roundup, but you're also rather new to the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent and the Valley, so welcome.
Thank you so much. It's great to be in such a beautiful spot of part of Colorado.
And you're a Coloradan.
I was born on the Front Range, yes, so I am a native.
But
I left for several years.
We all make that mistake once in a while. Tell us what you were up to right before coming back to Glenwood.
I was completing a journalism fellowship in Washington, D.C., reporting on federal government and a number of political issues out there. It was a fun time to be in the news.
So did you, like, escape just in time, or are you, like, mad that you didn't stay long enough?
You know, I was very conflicted because I love Colorado and my family's here, and so I wanted to come back to Colorado, but it is such an exciting time to be in Washington. On the whole, I'm happy where I am here, though.
So what are we expecting from you at the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent? Are you watching city council for us? Do you have a broader beat than that?
I will mainly be covering education in the Roaring Fork School District, some crime, and some of the federal land management agencies around town. I sort of cut my teeth on the council because our regular reporter, council reporter Matt Bennett, was out of town. So I got some good stories out of it while he was away.
All right, wonderful. You do have some good stories we'll get to later in the program, and I'm looking forward to the other beats as well, education and public lands, of course, big stories. Let's shift to, a public land story as well, if I can make my transitions as seamless as possible. It's layers of non-public, public land, and private, right? Because we're talking about Snowmass, the ski area, which is on public lands. However, Aspen Skiing Company owns that, or, you know, gets to manage those ski runs, right?
They lease the ski area.
Okay. And then I assume owns / manages the restaurants there as well. Erica, let's start with your story. We found out this week that Gwen's restaurant's lease is not going to be renewed.
That's right. The family behind that restaurant was informed of that recently and decided to share that with, you know, 38-year-old customers and people who have been going there, employees. And so that word has been being spread in the last week or so, and some people are pretty sad about it.
And so the expectation had been that they have this rotating lease and that they can just re-up it, and they would manage the restaurant that Ski Co. runs or owns.
Correct. So they've had a series of 4 10-year leases since their George Gordon and Gwen Knowlton started the restaurant prior to the 79 ski season, and they have renewed that lease, and they have the last 2 years coming up, and the expectation, at least from their, you know, perspective, was that Ski Co. would give them the option to renew that, and they were just informed that that would not be the case. However, Ski Co. wants their daughter, who currently manages the restaurant, Whitney Gordon, to come and help take that over with them and make it a smooth transition.
Madeline, I'm not sure that all of us understand the layers of who owns what or why this is up for discussion. So the Aspen Skiing Company has been taking over kind of more in-housing the restaurants on all four of their mountains.
Yes.
What's the motivation behind this? Why do they want to do that?
Profit.
Okay.
I mean, pure and simple, I would think there's economies of scale. Other areas do it in the U.S. You know, there's so many things that have emerged from this story. And having lived here a long time and watched this, it never goes smoothly.
Okay.
From the time the Pelletier's restaurant at Buttermilk at Tyhack, they left angry. George Schermerhorn and Bob ran the merry-go-round very well for years and years, and people were sad when they left. And here, 40 years is a long time.
Yeah.
And also, I think that I've had several ski instructors reach out to me, and they're afraid to speak out because they don't have a union, an association like the Patrol does.
Okay.
Patrol can be a little more forthright. The instructors said, this is where people want to eat. They want to be in smaller places. They don't, you know, and nothing against, you know, Elk Camp is great. The food is excellent there. It's a larger experience. It's a different experience. I know when my girls' group on Friday, we want to go to Bonnie's when we ski Aspen Mountain.
Right.
We want a smaller, more intimate experience. I mean, and it seems to be that that's what the guests want also. Why not keep a couple of these just little gems? My husband and I, when we skied in Zermatt about 10 years ago, I remember one day we had fondue at this funky little place. Another day we went to like this sausage hut that was about 100 square feet. I think that guests who ski a lot do want that variety. And for Mayor Markey to get involved,
yeah.
Now maybe we transition into that,
yeah.
Right? How I know 2 years ago that the council approached the ski company and asked, can we have something written in there that the Gordons, and then Ski Co said no, flatly. So they were upfront about that.
And that was perhaps a clue that this wasn't going to be extended.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So right now, though, why is it a different feel? You both ski Snowmass and go to Gwen's. Can we just talk about why it's special?
I think when you have family members, I think Whitney said when she was in grade school, she'd go around, it would have been so ingrained to her, how's your lunch today? You know, and then the folks who are there, they love that. Whereas you go to other restaurants where there isn't the family thing and you have new employees returning from year to year, you don't have that same. So I think that lends a lot to that feel.
And do you think visitors realize that that's not an Aspen Skiing Company business, that it's its own operation?
Oh, I definitely think people realize. Don't you, Erica?
Sure. Maybe not. They don't know the logistics, and quite frankly, they don't care. You know, they just they want to see the same faces. They want to go and, you know, get their soup and smile at the same person they've been smiling at for so many years. So I think, I don't know if they necessarily care about the politics behind it. They might now that it's going to change their experience potentially. But I do think it's that sense of family, that, you know, familiarity that you crave, especially when you come back and you have been coming to a place for so many years.
So the lease expiration would mean that the restaurant then goes directly managed and profits gained by Aspen Skiing Company. Do they keep it called Gwen's? Do they keep the same feel? Do we know anything of that?
It sounded like that's all up in the air for right now. But one takeaway from conversations with the family is that the only way they'd want it to be continued to be called Gwen's is if it maintains the same integrity or sense of experience. So they don't, you know, want their name, quite frankly, I mean, it's Gwen is the namesake, plastered on something that doesn't feel like their brand.
Okay.
So,
and they want a lot of the same employees. They have employees who've worked there for 30 years to continue. And I know when there were takeovers of other restaurants, that didn't happen.
And so they are employees of Gwen's. They're not an Aspen Skiing Company employee if you work at Gwen's.
Correct.
Wow.
And they have a lot of employees, too. So they have about 90 part and full-time. And they do have a solid number of part-time employees.
Yeah.
But that sounded, you know, in my conversations with Whitney Gordon, at least, like almost a contingency, you know, take me and some of my employees, because that's what lends to that experience just as much as, you know, her leadership is at least the way she views it.
That's so interesting. And that's an aspect I hadn't thought of at all, that staff. So what did council say? What did, you know, was that just kind of like the chitter chatter at the beginning of the meeting, or did they try and make something official happen?
I had heard over the weekend that Markey was incensed. And I think when I spoke to her on Monday morning, she had a dinner party with some friends and the previous night. So she had those things on her mind. But, you know, I want to tease our columnist, Mel Blumenthal. He has a column in Today, Friday's paper. And I don't want to give it away exactly, but he refers to the creeping corporatism. And I think that that's the point. And he floats a theory for why Aspen Skiing Company wants that property right now. Markey brought that up, the timing. So I'm just going to leave it to everyone to read Mel's column in the Aspen Daily News today. AspenDailyNews.com.
And, well, that's a contrast because Aspen Skiing Company also sells itself as a family business, right?
Yes. And another instructor pointed out to me that this flies in the face of, what do they call those guiding principles.
Okay.
And it does not abide that a decision like this on the surface does not abide by those principles, which I thought was an interesting. And then finally, Mel in his column, and he gives a shout out to Britta Gustafson, the columnist in the Snowmass Sun. It's just a beautiful column writer, just a beautiful person, really. But she touched on this a couple years ago and how quickly that you can lose character and then it's gone forever. And that the 40 years that these folks who have been coming here and the families and you know, if we're not careful, that this could be easily lost.
If we've seen protests or some broken hearts over restaurants closing on the mountains in the past or being taken over by the company, do you have any sense that there could be enough of an outcry that there would be any outcome but the one that we just learned about?
It's hard to say. It's hard to reverse a decision, but I think if people really stand up, maybe this is a special case. I know there was a comment on my story that said, well, why didn't people rise up about Cafe Suzanne? Well, maybe they weren't loud enough.
Okay.
You know, doesn't say that won't happen this time. But again, it might just pass and be another, okay, well, that was a great memory.
Do you remember that place called Gwen's?
Yeah. Well, my take on that would be, you know, people are very quick to go to Facebook and comment behind, you know, anonymous accounts or their own account, whatever it may be. And, you know, when we reported the story, there was tons and tons of that. And there still is, actually. It's still trickling in, even though it's been about a week now. And I think then how that translates to in-person action is where that gets lost. So, you know, sure, if a Facebook story can get a lot of comments, but what does that mean? You know, are there going to be protests outside? You know, probably not. So we'll see how, you know, people actually handle that.
I think that an elected official wants to make this statement is strong. I mean, Markey doesn't step back from controversy at all.
Right.
And I respect her for that. And I actually told her, I said, you'll probably get more people on board with this than your marijuana stance.
Well, let's go right into that. Erica, can you catch me up? Will there be pot sales in Snowmass Village in 2019?
In 2019, there should be.
Okay.
You know, a million things can change and they can go backwards. But to date, as of now, the council recently extended its moratorium for a third time, and they extended it through April 1. And when they chose that date, there were discussions that if we come to an agreement on our regulatory scheme prior to that date, we are able to lift the moratorium earlier. It's apparently a simple process. It's just poof, you know, it's gone. The ban is no longer. Right. So that's where it currently lies. And in my conversations with the town manager this week, I was asking, you know, it seems the council has recently made some progress with developing their rules. They really only have one detail to hammer out unless, again, they go backwards. So is it possible that we think the moratorium could be lifted sooner? His answer was essentially probably not.
Okay.
So it looks like to date, April 1 is when marijuana sales will be legal in Snowmass if, again, it goes the way it's currently going. And, you know, I was asking him also about timing of, hey, someone comes and tries to get a license from the town. What does that process look like in terms of how many months? And basically he said it being a completely new area for them, it probably will take a little while. Just to give some context, he said renewing a liquor license, so, you know, already having that in place, takes about a month.
Okay.
So that's just renewing a license that a business currently obtains. So how many months, you know, a new marijuana business will take to open, that's anyone's guess.
And where might those sales happen? Is that what they're hung up on, is how frequently, you know, physically close these shops can be?
Exactly. So the big question right now is whether the town wants to actually cap the number of licenses essentially cap the number of pot shops. And what that means is cap the number of licenses that can go through the town. And the town manager has, you know, consistently advised them not to do that for the reason of not having to play favorites. You know, say you get 10 applications. Well, how do you choose which one? So that's, and in many senses, it will be regulated based on the rules that they're setting. And a lot of those, you know, are imposing 300-foot distances between from one business to another. That's an overall rule. And they're only allowed on, you know, second-level spaces on the mall and the center. So the market will regulate itself. And that's why, you know, his advice is just let the market regulate itself. But the mayor, as well as some other council members, feel that might not be enough. So they are going to revisit that element of their scheme at a meeting December 3rd, because it's the next time they'll all be together and they really want all of their input on this issue.
Before we go to break, let's stick on Snowmass pot a little bit more, because that will, but voters do get a say.
Yes.
If and when pot is sold in Snowmass, would we want to tax it? That's one of their questions.
Exactly.
What I find really interesting, and I want to hear from both of you, is three uncontested incumbents on the Snowmass Town Council for the first time ever.
Yes. For the council members, not for the mayor. The mayor's seat has gone uncontested in the past.
So what is that teaching us?
Well, either people are really happy with council, or maybe they didn't want to get in the fray. The last time, as you remember, it was a little dicey with Richard Goodwin and Markey. That was an interesting race. And then I thought the council last time, too. I actually thought Jamie Knowlton was going to run because he ran last time, and he's been a good member of the Planning Commission, so I was surprised that he didn't.
I keep asking the town manager that. I'm like, what does this mean? What do you think? And he's like, I'd love to think it means everyone's super happy, but I don't know.
Well, that's a big time commitment.
Yeah. You are listening to Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. My guests today are Erica Robbie, the editor of the Snowmass Sun, Madeline Osberger, contributing editor of the Aspen Daily News, and Thomas Pippin, reporter with the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent. Thomas, do we still have you there on the line?
Oh, I'm still here.
Wonderful. I want to check in with you about some of that coverage you did with Glenwood Springs Town Council this week, and also has been generating a ton of Facebook messages after your reporting, just like some of the Gwen stories has. So tell me about this meeting between the Colorado Department of Transportation and the Glenwood Springs Council. What was the disagreement about when it comes to some of the changes they want to make in West Glenwood?
Well, the meeting was mainly a presentation from CDOT about their plans to build, to increase the number of commercial motorized vehicle spots, semi-truck parking spots in West Glenwood and in other areas along I-70 west of the canyon. So That was the reason for the meeting, but pretty early on in the presentation, the council members became very agitated about the process that was going on. And really what it was is, I heard numerous times, the city council wished that the Department of Transportation had come to them earlier in the process and engaged them as a partner, like they did for the Grand Avenue Bridge. The Grand Avenue Bridge, CDOT had the right to design and build the bridge without much input from the council, but they came and said, hey, we want to make this work for you as well, so we want to get your input. And for the truck parking project, they didn't do that. And so the council, they didn't have to, but the council was very disappointed in that. They see it as taking West Glenwood in a different direction than they wanted to see it go.
So the proposal is that all of a sudden we have some more official places where trucks can pull over on I-70 and park for whatever reason. There's bad weather before they go through the canyon. They are at the end of their shift and need to pull over and sleep. Maybe they just need more places to kind of get out and stretch their legs. And it sounds like probably CDOT didn't ask Glenwood Springs because they knew what the answer. I mean, they're on very different sides of this.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that area of Highway 6, right through West Glenwood at exit 114, truck drivers are already using the shoulder as a place to pull off, to sleep, to take their required rest after an eight-hour shift, or to rest after making a delivery before they get on the road again. So it's already a place where truck drivers are trying to take those rests, but in a very unsafe way. It's not set up for truck parking. In order to get back on the freeway, they often have to make very unsafe U-turns across the four lanes of the highway.
That's so scary.
So, yeah, CDOT is just making that more safe for the truckers.
One thing that I think incensed your readers was a comment by the mayor, Michael Gamba, who said, "Well, we don't want to put basically a pigsty next to a palace." maybe poor choice of words that he's reconsidering. But before I even talk about the the reaction to that. So then the CDOT member said, well, we're just giving the pigs pens. They're already there. And so, you know, like that analogy kept going on. But it doesn't sound like they're going all the way to build these pens, though, if we're going to use that analogy. They're not, except for at one of the locations, even talking about adding a bathroom, for instance. So they're acknowledging that people are taking time here, resting here, parking their cars here, but they're not really making it a full-blown truck stop facility.
Right, and that came up again and again, and CDOT is going to, or the council hopes to work with CDOT on some of those issues, you know, like bathrooms and what have you. But right, it's not a true truck stop, obviously. I think that the truck stop idea came about because, you know, you have a lot of trucks there, and once you make it a designated space for truckers, all of a sudden the number of truckers will probably increase because it's an actual place for them to park. Right now, it's around, CDOT said it's around 6 trucks on average at any given point in the day, and with 13 spaces on one side of 114 and 14 spaces on the other side, you know, that all of a sudden increases the number of trucks that can park there, and probably the number of trucks that are actually over there will also increase.
So what this brought up in the comments on your article, which I assume was like shared on a truck driver, you know, listserv or something like that, because there's a lot of people speaking and commenting in this discussion who are themselves drivers. But what it's set up is people who say preserve West Glenwood or like let's improve West Glenwood, and people who say there's nothing that you're getting in Glenwood or the Roaring Fork Valley that is not brought to you on one of these trucks. You have to treat these truckers and the trucks, you know, parking better.
Yeah, yes. And I think that, it definitely resonated with a lot of people on both sides. And a lot of the council, everyone in the council said, yes, they know that truckers do need a place to rest. They wished that maybe CDOT could have done something which would have been a little more expensive, but maybe condemn some land a little farther west to build a larger truck pull-off or something like that. You know, it's a tough balance because the council really thinks that West Glenwood has the potential to be developed into a much more high-end or more commercial area. Councilman Godis told me that he thinks that if the mall over there should ever change ownership, that has a huge potential for mixed-use space for both commercial development and for potentially affordable housing. But that's not really who's going to want to develop an area right next to truck pull-offs.
But Thomas, this Madeline asking here. Doesn't CDOT already own a large facility down kind of adjacent to the river? I don't know how much land they have there, but where they do their own business. This isn't, you know, commercial truckers, but CDOT has that property where they a lot of the drivers start their day. That's where they pick up their rigs. Over across the river.
Okay.
But I don't know. Maybe it's just not large enough.
That's a good question. Yeah. Do you know where? I would have to look that up. Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with exactly where that is.
Kind of across from the Glenwood Adventure Park, I think would be. I think the interesting what you brought up though about if there's ever redevelopment of the mall, that is prime for picking there. Mm-hmm. And for many, many years, it seems like it's been an underperformer.
Mm-hmm.
There also used to be trucks would go over. There's a gas station on the mall side there that's been redeveloped, but I know that used to be kind of a quasi truck stop over there.
Yeah, there is also the old. The decommissioned rest area, closer to like mile marker 115. They're also developing that into more spaces.
I think that was the point by some people who were, you know, like, can't you go 1 mile away or 15 miles away to Dotsero? There's other staging areas. Like, why do we have to build this on the outskirts of a town?
Yeah. There's another one at Tibbetts Point, which is that they're going to develop into 23 spaces. That's one of the boat launch areas on the Colorado River. And CDOT said that they're looking at ways to direct truckers to that location first before they come to Glenwood. And so hopefully they would say they would try to make West Glenwood only for emergency pull-offs, or if they really need to, for overflow. But we'll have to wait and see, I guess, how that exactly works out.
This is why city council coverage actually is my favorite thing. It gets so nerdy in it, but for a headline that seems like it's not about you, I mean, first of all these truckers are bringing everything that we use right here in the valley. The parking can affect things like if you love supping that portion of the river, if that's the boat ramp you use, and now you're fighting way more truckers. I mean, that's, I think, really relevant to a lot of people, and I'm going to be interested to hear what the recreationalists say about this. And then I love the mall. That's my favorite place in the valley. Madeline's face is so funny. I'm such a...
The mall that time forgot.
Yes, exactly. It's my favorite escape. So that's all funny stuff. Well, and then the very last, to close up the CDOT meeting, then the council reflected with themselves on how much they would want to support essentially CDOT, you know, Proposition 110, a tax for transportation funding, and they came out against it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to push the tie parking too much. Yes, it was mentioned. It was mentioned when the debate about opposing 110 came up. It was mentioned that they had a long meeting with CDOT, and but there were a lot of other issues. You know, like CDOT doesn't want to pay for projects that are off system. So, like other city roads, they don't want to help city roads that would decongest some of the larger system roads. So there was that issue, and then the city council didn't feel like they were getting as much they anticipate the tax bringing in around $3 million for CDOT, and they would only get around $300,000 in money for projects in Glenwood. And then the issue of Glenwood Springs already has some pretty high taxes, and if you add another tax on top of that for CDOT, it all of a sudden becomes sales taxes approach 10% in some areas.
Wow.
Town. So there were a lot of different issues regarding that. And then they declined to consider supporting 109.
Okay. So another transportation bill.
The other transportation bill, right.
We'll keep our eye out on what people across the state think about those. All right. I know all of you do really responsible reporting all the time, but there is nothing I love more than a story about bears.
Even more than city council?
No, it's so close, and sometimes I get them confused. Erica, can we close out with the story about the bears in the Snowmass Rec Center?
Snowmass Mall.
Oh, in the
even
okay.
better. that feels like a while ago now. Four bears, a mama bear and her three cubs, three larger size cubs, it was noted, entered the Snowmass Center via the automatic doors and then couldn't escape. They couldn't get out, so they spent the night there.
Was it like the perfect timing? This is like a movie mm-hmm. from the 90s where you accidentally get trapped in like a mall or in a museum or something. Like the automatic doors were working, so they opened when the bears walked by. They were able to go in, but then like someone walked by, turned them off for the night, closed it all, and then... I mean, how did they get in?
You're asking some hard-hitting questions, Allison. Questions I cannot answer.
All right, well.
We don't know all the logistics, but we do know they got tired of trying to get out, essentially, and they cozied up and
took a nap.
Called it a night. And not until about 5 a.m. when an employee came in to open up Clark's, where they discovered.
Thank you for sharing that with all of us. You have been listening to Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bektesh. My guests today are Eric Harabi, editor of the Snowmass Sun, Madeline Osberger, contributing editor with the Aspen Daily News, and Thomas Phippen, reporter with the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent. Thank you all so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.